a radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's Gallant.
That's a G.
Yo, and George.
Thanks, Joe.
Okay. Yeah.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
Another no-hitter. There's been so many no-hitters since 2019. We don't talk about 2015 and that rat that threw one, but Ronald Blanco last night in his eighth career start throws a no-hitter 5 days after making the opening day roster, and it was just, what a moment. The offense went bananas last night. So many home runs. After all the bad things that we talked about yesterday that happened over the weekend, Paul, it's amazing how one game can just make everything feel so much better about the Houston Astros.
No doubt about it. I mean, that's what that offense is capable of on a, maybe not nightly basis, but semi-regular basis. And Ronald Blanco, especially if that changeup that he was throwing so much, I'm not even sure you can call it a changeup anymore. Mm-hmm. With seven strikeouts, and as you said, no hits. If Blanco can do that against a decent lineup in Toronto, maybe you do have an answer to your lack of starting pitching depth for the next couple of months until the reinforcements arrive.
I mean, he looked so different in yesterday's game. That changeup, you know, Blum and TK were talking about a lot last night how he had one strikeout last year on the changeup, and he was going to it constantly throughout the game. And his slider fastball changeup split was almost, at one point, it was like 38, 33, 25. That math's wrong. I know, I'm guessing. But it just, he was so effective with the changeup. He totally looked like a different pitcher than the guy we saw in the past. And we knew that he had some electric stuff. You know, there's a reason why they liked him.
I don't know if it was ever electric. Do you look at 94, 95 miles per hour, which is what they saw when they first saw him at 22 years old in the Dominican Republic?
The story's great.
They discovered him because they were at the same facility that then 15, 16-year-old Julio Rodriguez used.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, wait, you could throw 95? And he said, yeah. And they asked him further, hey, why has no one signed you? And he said, well, when you're 19, they stop looking at you.
Which
my
is
God.
Crazy.
What, are baseball scouts Leonardo DiCaprio all of a sudden? I mean,
it's crazy.
There's a certain age where they don't even look at you anymore. But I never thought, Joe, his stuff was electric. I thought it was good enough to make do when people are injured. But all of a sudden, if you're relying on one pitch that much last night, and it's that effective.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's something here, you would think, and maybe it's one start, but to do that against a Blue Jays team, it seems like he's made some significant improvements from last year to this year. And last year, he had a stretch where he was surprisingly pretty good in a starting role.
It was a confidence boost in which it's like that's your middle relief answer at worst when everyone gets healthy. At a bare minimum, that looks like a guy that can be a middle relief answer for this team.
Yeah.
If not, just be your fifth man in the rotation until these guys start to come back. And I don't, you know, if his changeup is really this good, he could even give you some uncomfortable conversations down the road or bring back the six-man rotation conversation. His stuff was really, really impressive last night. And for Joe Espada to now be the first, I love this stat. The first manager in Major League Baseball history to get their first win with a no-hitter. Like, that's why I love baseball, because only in baseball can things like this happen.
I bet he's also the first manager in Major League history to get his first win via a no-hitter after an 0-4 start.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Or just first win. Like, I mean, what a... Everything was good about last night. And we were talking about this before the show. I didn't realize it was a no-hitter until the seventh inning. because I was on dad duty last night. My wife was at work.
Oh, I'm a dad. I'm going to shirk my responsibilities.
I was like, you know, Astros on the computer, Baby Shark on the big TV, one of those nights.
Oh, boy, you had to watch Baby Shark?
For a little bit last night. We try to avoid it as much as possible.
My bad. I'm sorry.
He specifically asked for it last night.
I'm sorry for what I said. Yeah. I feel for you. That is a torture that should only be reserved for Guantanamo.
Yeah, look, it's not a great life at times. I'll not lie. Like, there's definitely times where...
Just watch Bluey all the time.
He won't watch it.
He won't watch it?
He won't watch it.
Oh, he has no taste.
He has no taste.
Your son is just an absolute amateur when it comes to...
I agree.
His selection in film... And cinema. What an amateur.
The only thing that is a positive from my son's television watching experience is he will sit and watch football games with me.
He will watch football, but not...
He won't watch baseball.
Not no-hitters by Ronel Blanco. Yeah. That's not good enough for him.
It's not good enough
Even
for
me, a non-baseball lover, that's good enough for me.
It's 100% good enough for everyone. But then the offense last night was the other story.
Oh, my goodness. That...
Just hitting dingers. Left and right. Kyle Tucker, Yainer Diaz, Jeremy Pena. Sing it for me, Paul.
Jeremy Pena hit a home run for the first time since July 5th yesterday.
He looked so happy to hit that home run.
I love the silent treatment.
It's another great thing of baseball.
The back of that lineup, once again, 6-for-11. Two doubles by Chaz McCormick. And Jake Myers hit a single about as hard as you can hit a single. Off of the Crawford box wall.
Yeah.
So, very, very impressive performance by the lineup. Two home runs from Kyle Tucker is almost an afterthought. Because I know, Joe, a lot of people today are looking at, one, Yainer Diaz hitting two absolute bomb
that
of home runs.
One.
The first one, holy crap.
It was way out of the zone.
So, two home runs, and he calls a no-hitter for a guy who's making his eighth start ever, This is a big W for a lot of the anti-Dusty Baker people. It is a big W for a lot of the anti-Martin Maldonado people. I would say, well, maybe Maldonado would have caught a perfect game. You know, I mean, two walks to George Springer.
Yeah.
But even I have to bend the knee to the thought that, yeah, Dusty Baker was using Maldonado a little bit too much last year. I will say at the same time, because a lot of my pushback was in jest, mainly because I felt like some of the people with the just slander that they directed Dusty Baker's way, and sometimes Maldonado, though more understandable with Maldonado, I thought it was so over the top that somebody needed to at least say, let's slow it down a little bit.
Yeah.
Two things can be true, though. One, Yainer Diaz should have played last year a little bit more. Two, Yainer Diaz playing last year would not have won them the American League Championship Series against the Rangers had he played more.
Yeah.
Because he didn't hit very well in that series, and the Astros gave up so many runs the last couple of games. I don't know what Yainer Diaz was going to do on his
own. There is a good amount of revisionist history happening on Astros Twitter with Dusty Baker, Yainer Diaz, and Martin Maldonado.
I'm here for it, though. I enjoy the Civil War. It's nice to see. You know, throw some gasoline on one side, throw some gasoline on the other, and sit back and watch the fireworks.
And here's the thing, too. Like, the no-hitter thing, it's great that Yainer caught one. The Astros have had six since 2019. Martin only caught half of those. Martin caught the one on August 3rd. That was the Aaron Sanchez, Will Harris, Joe, you're not very funny, Biagini, Davinsky. And then Robinson Chirinos caught Justin Verlander that same year. Maldonado caught the first Javier in the regular season versus the Yankees. Christian Vasquez caught the next one in the World Series. Martin caught the Fromber one, and then Yainer caught this one. So it's a good balance.
Mostly Maldy.
Mostly Maldy. Three is the record, I believe, for a catcher, at least in the recent history.
And Maldy then taught everything that he knows to Yainer Diaz.
Yeah.
And
thank you, Dusty.
Thank you, Dusty.
Yeah. Thank you, Dusty.
Thanks, Sean.
Thank you, Dusty.
Oh, thank me. Oh.
What are we thinking, Sean?
I did nothing compared to all the hard work that Dusty did.
But I'm thanking Sean for bringing up.
For thanking Dusty?
For thanking Dusty, yeah. Yes. No Someone problem. Has to do it.
All those 30-year-old bloggers.
Oh, unbelievable.
Could never be me.
Could never be you.
Literally.
Well, you would never read a blog.
Because you're not 30. 5038, possible hot take. Yainer swings so much and walks so little, he will get 3,000 hits. Eric the driver.
Sure.
Eric, spicy.
I like it.
Spicy.
500 home runs.
How many catchers have 3,000 hits?
How many people have 3,000 hits?
Well, yeah, but especially catcher. I get that he swings a lot, but that's aggressive. But hey, you know what? After the show we did Monday, I think we deserve a all sunshine and rainbows day today, because all the issues that they had, that trust me, we went over with a fine-tooth comb. All of it kind of played out. They scored 10 runs and also had a no-hitter.
Yeah. Middle relief looked great yesterday.
Can't really do much better than that.
They should try to do that every single night. What do you think?
That should be the goal.
Score 10 runs and throw a no-hitter. I think that...
I love it.
Look, I know that it's hard for Joe Espada filling in for the great Dusty Baker. But this is the kind of standard that Espada needs to demand out of his players on a nightly basis. No-hitters and 10 runs.
I have a question.
Yes.
And then it's the very Joe went through all the no-hitters that they've thrown since 2019. The Astros have thrown more no-hitters than any other team, like, in that span by a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Do we think that the Astros throw another no-hitter this season?
Yes. Because they always do it in twos.
It's an absurd thing to ask about a Major League Baseball team is the day after they throw a no-hitter, do you think they throw another? But with recent history, and Ronel Blanco threw the first one.
Yeah, I mean, they only threw one last year, but in 19 they threw two, 22 they threw two.
They've had four since June of 2022. The other 29 teams in baseball have a combined three.
They're going to throw another one this year.
That is okay, good. I was thinking that last night after the final out, of course. I would never jinx something in my own
brain. We'll get to that.
But I was thinking, like, this is absurd, but I kind of think they'll throw the no-hitter.
I wonder if...
Combined, at least.
Six since 19, the team in second place, I don't even know who they are. They have two.
Can you...
I like to think that it's a team that you, like, you actually can see the team name, and you're like, I've never heard of this team. I've never heard of this Major League Baseball team.
What's the scandal that comes up that people try to say, this is why the Astros are doing it? Because there are so many that you would think that all of the,
I don't know,
the people that have the orange team bad syndrome, mm-hmm, that some people are going to start looking for something, right?
Well, let's just go to Twitter and just type in Astros cheating.
Astros derangement syndrome, lady. Astros paranoia. I mean, most of the anger last night on the internet was directed at Phil Maton, who hit three Rangers in a row last night, and he didn't get ejected, which is incredible. Now, part of it was because the Evan Carter throw that hit Carter in the foot, but then he hit Adolis Garcia, who almost had another temper tantrum. Oh, he's looking really big these days. Wonder what his workout regimen is. And then on top of that, he broke Josh Jung's wrist on a ball that Josh Jung swung at. And guess what? The Astros get the Rangers coming up soon. Phil Maton.
Phil Maton, Astro for life. Put him in the Ring of Honor. Retire the number.
Once an Astro, always an Astro.
Yeah.
Unless you're Mike Fiers.
What number did you wore like 80, right? Or no,
88.
Yeah, retire 88. I think he's
still
wearing
that. Retire 88. He's still officially Team Astros. Also, Adolis Garcia, definitely taking steroids. 100%.
Well, here's
the
thing.
It looks like he's definitely taking steroids.
He looks like
allegedly.
He looks like Barry Bonds.
So,
allegedly.
I looked this up for the live stream I did after the show last night, and there's a picture of Adolis Garcia with the St. Louis Cardinals where his neck is similarly massive Mayan pyramid-esque, where it's just, there's no real point to it, you know?
He doesn't have a neck.
But that's been a thing for a bit. I don't know when it got big. I was looking through old Adolis Garcia pictures, and a lot of them he's wearing baggy uniforms.
Mm-hmm.
There's not one where he looks like a twig. It's not quite a Barry Bonds transformation. And believe me, I looked. I was on Google Images. I went through three pages looking for a before and after. Well, I wanted Joe, why are you laughing? I'm doing journalism.
Of you sitting at home on page three of a Google Images search looking for skinny Adolis Garcia.
Yeah. What? I'm sorry. I'm a journalist. I'm a journalist.
You're a great journalist.
Big J Journo has to do the research, okay? Because there's a lot of people that are making the accusations. And, I mean, there's the person who enjoys the Astros and doesn't like the Rangers and also thinks Adolis Garcia is a psycho based off of the way that he handled that situation, mm-hmm, against the Astros. There is a part of me that would like maybe some things to come out. But I have to be honest and fair. And yeah, there's a picture of him with the St. Louis Cardinals where he also does not have a neck. It's just this big, massive square, and he looks kind of like a middle linebacker.
All right, we'll continue talking about the Astros no-hitter thrown by Ronald Blanco last night. Eighth career start, sixth no-hitter since 2019 for the Stros. They went 10-0 against the Blue Jays. What a way to get your
greatest
first win.
Greatest day of our lives.
Greatest day of our lives until today. We'll see what happens today.
The greatest day of our lives again.
And we'll see if the 10-run curse is real. Do you believe in jinxes? We'll get to that. But we'll just continue talking about the no-hitter in last night's game on Glotton George here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
It's Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
713-780-3776, the text line, the HRMP listener line as well, 5847. Astro social media is the craziest, most overreactionary group of people in the world, calling to fire Espada and wishing for Dusty back. Yeah, I agree with that. I would say Astros Twitter is the most overreactionary place on the planet.
Well, it's kind of hard to determine who is the actual most overreactive fan base in Houston sports because, as I've said before, this is a town largely of bandwagoners. It is. People like the team that's good or the teams that are good. And the people who have been there from day one perhaps have a idealized view of the team that they have been watching that finally turns the corner. And then the people that haven't been there every single day, they come in and they're like, ugh, whenever anything goes wrong. And it just is a powder keg for back and forth. But yeah, I think that every single baseball fan base after the first series of the year is going to react in the same way that we did yesterday. And rightfully so, especially if you lose four in a row. But this was a nice bounce back. The offense is capable of this on a regular basis. And if Ronald Blanco can continue that changeup, have it that whatever effective for whatever reason it was, I mean, no one adjusted to it over the course of the game. He went through the lineup three times. Then you got to feel pretty good about his participation in the starting rotation, and maybe it deserves to be a longer stint than just until everybody comes back.
Yeah, and we are, and that conversation is going to be probably pretty quick here. Justin Verlander threw 53 pitches yesterday, did a couple up and downs in his bullpen session, and he didn't make any promises, as Julia pointed out last night on the broadcast, but it sounds like in the next 5 days he's going to be in Sugarland. And the Space Cowboys are in town till I think it's April 7th is their last home game before they hit the road for the first time for the next time this season.
But they're always at home on ESPN 92.5.
Fact. I wouldn't be shocked if on ESPN 92.5 you can see Justin Verlander pitch
here
in the next 5 days.
I'd be shocked if you could see him pitch.
I would be really shocked.
You could see him pitch in Sugarland. You could hear him pitch here. Yes. That's what I mean.
Unless you have major news coming.
If you can see Justin Verlander pitching on ESPN 92.5, then, I mean, you may be on to something
I know that Gerald paints a beautiful picture.
You see with your brain.
Yeah.
Because he's just so talented. Him and Garrett just, you know.
So true.
So true.
You can just, in your car, close your eyes, and it's like you're there at Constellation Field.
Yeah.
And then you're in the fender bender.
Yeah, you're in the worst traffic in Houston because you're listening to a Space Cowboys game.
Yeah, you're dealing with Rasheed Rice piling into you.
And running away in the middle of, we're going to get
Did
more
you
into
see
that
what later. Happened? He got out the passenger seat. He got out of the passenger seat.
He did?
Yeah. Two people got out of the passenger seat.
So you don't technically know who was driving.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, it was his rental car.
I think he's setting up to have a fall guy. I think that's what's happening.
But two people got out of the passenger seat.
Hey. You don't know.
We got some spicy takes on the text line today.
What do we got?
Let's overreact here. Fromber ends up as the third starter by the end of the year. I mean,
behind
I don't think
who?
Ronel Blanco, and who else?
I don't think that's super spicy, as long as you're not including Ronel Blanco in that, because Verlander, Javier, Fromber, you could see Fromber being the worst of those three. Yeah.
Spicy would be saying right now that Ronel Blanco is the Houston Astros ace, even if it is statistically true based off of the first five starts of the rotation.
Show me who has better numbers.
Fact. I'm very much looking forward to the next Ronel Blanco start already, because it's now the most anticipated game over the next week for me. Because I'm so curious that you pointed out, three times through the order, they never figured out the changeup. I'm always curious about in baseball, like, now that the book has been written a little bit, just how does that next start look? Is there going to be a little bit more prepared for the changeup?
You would think so. I don't know if you can call it a changeup, and I get that that's the technical definition for, you know, throwing a fastball that's slower than a fastball. Mm-hmm. But if that's your dominant pitch, doesn't it have to be called something else? This is an idiot asking a dumb question about baseball, but it can't be a changeup if that's your dominant pitch, right? Like, isn't it something else? Don't you have to give it a name?
No.
Call it like the gyro ball or ridiculous?
That's already taken.
No,
unfortunately.
How about the slow ball? Huh?
The slow ball?
Yeah.
Is this what it was like to be on a Major League Baseball team in like 1910 when they're having to name all these?
When they're like, what are we going to call this one?
These are all the ideas that got shut down by Mordecai Brown.
Yeah. Like, this pitch is going to go from 12 to 6, and we're going to name it a curveball.
Listen, see, we're going to call it the Prohibition Ball.
That ball's got a wiggle to it.
Yeah, a lot less wiggle to this one. You know, it's a lot like a girl not doing the Charleston. It's like a girl doing the old slow Victoria Blues, you know? My favorite dance move.
It's like, actually, let's just call it a slider.
Slider, because it slides.
I think that one
slides
that one
across the play. But the offense last night, I mean, Blanco, as incredible as he was, it was so refreshing to see that offense last night. Even with Bregman going 0-for-4, Alvarez doesn't get a hit in last night's game. Abreu gets his first hit of the season. So, you know, that's positive. He also made the 26th out look a lot more complicated than it needed to be.
That was a nice play. But the problem was early in the game, there was a double play that could have happened, and it just bounces off of his glove. And then he strikes out the next at bat, and then he grounds out first pitch at bat. And you're like, oh, my God. So he got his first hit, and you hope that changes everything going forward. There is definitely, for Jose Abreu, a lot more scrutiny just based off of the way he played last year. Deservedly so. So hopefully those two plays are a sign that the best is yet to come.
He did make a, you know, like a Trey Mancini-esque, like, oh, my God, how did he make that play?
After what he did the day before?
Yeah.
And then to make that play?
The six innings before. Yeah. The one that he did in the first inning.
This might be mean.
Do it.
I'm just prepared for Jose Abreu to now be the Martin Maldonado of this team. And to just be...
That's a good take.
Absolutely trash
2023,
in the lineup.
He's the 24 Martin Maldonado.
Yeah. A really overpaid Martin Maldonado.
Who's the Yiner Diaz he's playing in front of? Because that's the
Joey,
next step.
Joey Loperfido?
At the AAA level, okay. Yeah?
It's not Singleton.
Victor Caratini. Yeah, that's the problem.
It's not Caratini
right now.
It's got to be someone under 25. So Loperfido?
Yeah.
That's ageist.
It'll have to be someone that...
Look at Ronel Blanco. Look what he did last night.
No, just to be the Yiner.
Yeah, to be the Yiner, like, you have to...
It has the idea that you're blocking a young... Yeah,
the other just blocking somebody who plays ball.
Yeah, so...
Baller's ball, regardless of age, Sean.
I think it's...
I know.
Yeah, he's the Martin Maldonado of the Astros going forward, and he will be for the next 2 years until he's gone. He's not going to be good. He's just not.
I'm not ready to close the slam the book shut on it. He was bad for what?
7/8 of the season.
And then got good.
Yeah, for 1 month. Martin Maldonado also had hot streaks.
No, he didn't.
No, he didn't. His were like one game off.
He had a game where he would hit a home run.
I was texting one of my buddies who used to work here, Adam Sager. He used to produce for Salisbury too at the flagship, and he's a White Sox fan, but covered, you know, Houston sports for a long time. And I was texting him last night, and I'm just like, can you when you watch him play, what do you see? Because trying to see if I was wrong, and he said he just looks like a dinosaur compared to what he looked like in Chicago. He looks nothing like the guy that played for the White Sox. So he's Martin Maldonado. It's It's my official stance.
Wow. Damn, dude.
Sorry. I don't think it's too mean. I don't believe.
I don't think he's going to be the guy he was in Chicago, but I still think that he can be decent. Now, he might still be the whipping boy of Astros Twitter.
He's definitely the whipping boy.
Yeah, and so maybe he doesn't play so well that he like graduates out of that, where he's still the one everyone points at. But I mean, I don't think he'll be an absolute train wreck.
And he will be the number one target,
yeah,
and ire amongst Astros Twitter and radio and everything, because Jake Meyers, at least in the lineup. Yeah, Jake Meyers is going to have a more productive season than Jose Abreu this year at times. Not all the time. And so will Mauricio Dubon and Chaz McCormick. Those issues will be more about playing time and the way Espada uses them. But Abreu, it's just – Junior Bronco said it here on the Twitch. He's just old. He looks old.
Pilates maybe not working.
He might be more flexible. He might be less sore.
He needs to do lifting weights in the pool.
He just can't catch a fastball.
Jazzercise?
Jose Abreu Jazzercise? Maybe that should be the next HEB commercial.
Listen, we're just exploring options out here. Can
Dubon play first? 3-2-6.
I saw a couple of texts that asked that. I mean, he is a super utility Gold Glover. So the assumption is yes.
I think he played like a game.
I think
he played
one game last year.
Why are first basemen always of like the same body type? I understand that generally a first baseman is left-handed, but I've never understood why they're always like larger. Do you need to be?
I think it's because generally you can't play anywhere else. But your bat is so good, you want to keep them in the lineup, but you're too slow to put in like left field.
That makes sense.
So it's like, hey.
It could change now with the universal DH. You could see more athletic guys play first base at some point. But yeah, I would be very open to just trying it. Try Dubon at first.
I have a question, and this is just my ADD brain working, but the term whipping boy, which I think we all agree that Jose Abreu is. I looked up the history of this.
Oh, God.
Well, I wanted canceled? To make sure it wasn't. Problematic.
It seems like it'll be problematic.
It just feels problematic.
Like, when you really isolate it.
Guess what? It's not problematic.
There's no way it's not
problematic. I swear, it's not problematic. I mean, what was done was problematic, but this isn't problematic.
Are you sure it's not?
Yes. Let me tell you. A whipping boy was a boy educated alongside a prince in early modern Europe. Since you can't punish the prince, this boy would receive corporal punishment whenever the prince did something bad. Now, obviously, you don't do this anymore.
That's terrible. That's like if Sean messed up, I would yell at the intern.
Yeah.
Can we get that? Can we get that going?
Because I'm a yeller at you, Sean.
Yeah. I heard whipping boy, and I thought something else. And this is just European.
I think that's problematic still.
It is problematic, but at least it didn't. You know, originated in like 1790 in Georgia.
Yes, good point. Because that's what Touché. I thought it was going to.
Yeah. 6856. So you guys not going to mention Alvarez batting 100? No, because I don't care.
You feel good that he's going to figure it out. Where with Abreu, you don't. And yeah, it's because of everything we know about Jordan. Jordan on Sunday was very close to having an incredible day at the plate.
Yes.
Obviously, he's off to a slow start.
He's one of the three best hitters in baseball.
I'm happy he's healthy. That's sort of where I'm at with Alvarez. He's going to figure it out eventually. We're only talking about a 5-game sample size. Mm-hmm. With Jose Abreu, it's a little bit different because of last year. If you can say that, hey, we're being unfair in singling out Abreu versus Alvarez, but doesn't everybody expect Alvarez to be refined within the next couple of weeks? Yes.
Jose Abreu hasn't even made close to the contact that Yordan Alvarez has. Has Jose Abreu sent one to the warning tracks yet? I don't think so. I do not think Jose Abreu has hit a baseball 380 feet this season. Yordan Alvarez has multiple of those. They just happen to be outs. The home runs, the at-bat, the average, all that stuff, it's going to come. He's one of the best hitters in baseball. So, no, I'm not worried, or I don't even think it's really worth the mention. It's him and Alex Bregman are going to figure it out. All right.
I think it's worth the mention, but I'm not panicking.
Sure, yeah.
It is interesting that he's also hitting poorly.
It is Tuesday, which means there's a bunch of stuff we didn't get to yesterday because the Astros started the season 0-4. Yesterday they threw a no-hitter, but there's a bunch of stuff we missed. So in case you missed it, that's next here in Glanton, George on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
Did you catch everything this weekend in the world of sports and beyond? Neither did we.
I do not recall that, okay?
It doesn't ring a bell.
Sorry, I have no recommendation of that.
No idea.
Absolutely not.
And now, in case you missed it, with Gallant and George.
I like that we have our own intros on a side. I like that.
Yeah.
It was a feisty weekend. In baseball.
Yes, it was.
We started off strong.
Making the sport actually interesting outside of our beloved Houston Astros.
So, Rhys Hoskins starts with the Brewers and the Mets. He slides into second base, and there is a fight right away. Or at least the bench is clear.
Right, because supposedly the slide was...
outside? Like a little late?
Right. I think the person who was coming over to cover second base, I forget if he was a shortstop or second baseman, he thought that Hoskins went out of his way to slide into him.
Mm-hmm.
So, that was followed up with Hoskins getting thrown at, and the pitcher who threw at Hoskins pulled a Hector Neris, minus the allegedly homophobic slurs,
mm-hmm.
and got in Hoskins' face after that happened. I like it.
Baseball I do
too. Needs more of this.
Yeah, Hoskins hit a tank and then they got thrown at. Also, my favorite part was Sue, as the second baseman or shortstop, was yelling at Hoskins in that first game. Hoskins does the crybaby. He rubs his eyes. I very much enjoyed that. That was fun. So that started the fighting over the weekend. And then the Rays and the Blue Jays, they got into a fight as well.
There was a shove, too.
And that's why the guy who came in last night in the eighth inning, I think it was, for the Blue Jays, is only pitching because he's appealing a three-game suspension.
All right.
We got suspensions being handed out the first couple days of baseball?
We need more brawls.
Yeah, it should be like hockey. Let them fight.
I agree. It's better.
Yeah, and let them have at it.
Don't hold them back. Let them fight, for God's sake. I want to get my money's worth. I don't want to have the game stop because they're trying to separate everybody from each other. Let them duke it out.
Yeah.
And once they've duked it out, guess what? You move on with
and
your
just,
day.
Just keep the old men off the field.
No, you know, more so old men on the field.
A Pedro moment.
No, I like that. Listen, that's ageism. You're acting like an old man's going to go out there and get his ass kicked. Maybe he won't.
I mean,
there's a lot of older people listening to this show, Joe, and you've just alienated them.
I mean, I just don't want you as an old person to get thrown to the ground by a more athletic young person.
No, you just don't want the young people to potentially get embarrassed if the old man, you know, goes Buzz Aldrin on their ass.
Oh, I love that clip.
That's the best. That was the best. Those moon denier truthers are like just absolute scum.
50% of the Twitch believes that, you think?
What?
That we didn't land on the moon?
We landed on the moon.
I was going to say.
I hope Buzz Aldrin punches you in the face if you believe that we didn't land on the moon.
Yeah, I very much enjoy that video.
Hell yeah.
It was funny. I was watching, for some reason, there's this Twitter account, historical videos,
mm-hmm.
and they showed the one today where Ryan Dempster was just chucking it at A-Rod after he got popped for steroids the second time.
Oh, fun.
And he just started throwing it at him. I very much enjoyed that.
Hell yeah.
Police the game. You know, Phil Maton? He's got our back. He's got the Astros back. So.
Was Phil Maton police in the game?
He was.
Okay.
He was saying that Brian Abreu's suspension was ridiculous, so I'm going to throw at every Ranger I can.
Until I get suspended.
Until I get suspended.
And I guess since Josh Jung swung at one of the hit-by-pitches, doesn't get suspended.
Hey, that's
for
Josh
that.
Jung's fault. Okay? You swung at the pitch. That's on you. If you swing at it, even if it's inside and it breaks your wrist, I'm sorry. That's not the pitcher's fault. Victor Wembanyama got a hefty fine this weekend because he threw the ball into the stands.
Bad sport. Classic French.
He is something, man.
Oh, he's really good at basketball. But he's also a bad influence on the kids.
Disrespecting the game.
Mm-hmm.
Disrespecting me. Life.
Right. Well, that could have hit a child in the crowd.
Maybe it did.
They would have killed him. Maybe.
He's kind of a whiny baby, though.
Attempted assault with a weapon in the great state of Texas. Some would say that's punishable by a lot of different means.
Sure.
Not by a whipping boy. I'm not talking about that.
Yeah, you don't want to be the
Whipping boy for Wembanyama.
No.
Now I'm just picturing someone, Popovich yelling at someone on the bench, for,
like the tenth guy off the bench.
Yeah, and, what,
like if the Spurs ever signed like Buddy Boeheim, like, we know why he gets the Victor Wembanyama punishment.
Well, see, here's the thing: like Buddy Boeheim in a small town like Syracuse, he would himself get his own whipping boy for any transgressions he commits.
It's
but
whipping boys all the way down.
Wembanyama, as a European, and for those who don't know, this was some whipping boys were essentially
it's his culture
for. For European princes, they were just these kids that were like their friends that would receive corporal punishment when the princes screwed up, which obviously is going to lead to some, I imagine, just really well-adjusted princes who would never do this just for the sake of seeing this kid have the absolute crap kicked out of him. But Victor Wembanyama, as a French person, may be into the idea of whipping boys, and the NBA has to make a lesson of him, put him in stockades.
Apparently it was because the Spurs won, huge. Mm. And two, it was because Jalen Brunson had gone for like
60.
Yeah, I think it was like 60, and so he just threw the game ball in the stands, so Jalen Brunson couldn't have the game ball from scoring 60 points.
Man, a lot of that going on. Remember, they wouldn't let Giannis have the ball either this year.
I like ball wars.
I will say, if I'm Jalen Brunson, it's cool to score 60, but you lost.
And you lost to the Spurs.
Yeah, it's like Karl Anthony Towns scoring his 60.
Against the Hornets. All these awful teams have beaten guys that have scored 60 this year.
Yeah, because it's not good basketball.
You know what? Now that I hear it, I mean, even though he could have killed somebody with it.
Yeah, that's a risk worth taking.
It is kind of funny that he threw it in because Brunson's scoring 60.
Statistically, though, he's less likely in San Antonio to hit a small child. There's a lot of bigger targets out there.
Significantly.
Fair.
Ask Charles Barkley.
Russell Westbrook's back, and he's screaming at this Hornets fan, which there's so much about this video that I love. The first part is that this loser adult has a balloon helmet
on. I don't think he's a loser. How dare you say
not
that
a
about,
loser.
How dare you say that about someone wearing a balloon hat?
Where's your balloon hat?
No one made me one.
Yeah, we don't have that.
So if I get
we don't have a kiosk here.
If I get someone to make like balloon hats for you guys, you'll wear it the whole show.
100%. I mean, it might mess my hair up a little bit, so not the whole show, but
balloon
I would wear
hats
it.
With the painted nails.
If the Rockets make the play-in tournament. There's no reason for me to put also on the balloon hat unless the Rockets in the play-in tournament or in the playoffs beat the Clippers. But fine, Rockets make the playoffs. I'm painting my nails in solidarity with Jalen Green, and if the Rockets beat the Clippers and Russell Westbrook, I will wear a balloon hat.
The Clippers are going to be like the four seed.
And just remember, when they don't make the playoffs, pause to get two more cats.
No, that's not happening.
Agreed.
That was the wager that we
agreed upon. I didn't agree.
Handshakes.
Well, you got outvoted 2-3. This is a democracy.
I mean, it started off with you're going to go impregnate two people.
And successfully,
you negotiated it down to two cats.
I didn't. No, I just said I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
I'm not doing that. I'm not getting two more cats. Arya will kill them.
Baylor fans are really upset with LJ Cryer.
So LJ Cryer, basically after the Coug season came to an end, said that he had wished he had gone to the University of Houston sooner. I mean, anyone who's been to Baylor's campus, it's pretty, but I mean, not a lot to do there. So, duh. And a lot of Baylor fans got big mad about that. And then they started saying, well, hey, man, you won a national title with us. And he did. But also, again, Baylor is not the kind of place where I personally would want to have my 4 years of college experience. And I see nothing wrong with LJ Cryer saying he enjoyed his time there more, especially when all the Baylor people start attacking him for him to double down and say, yeah, of course I liked it better with the University of Houston than I did at Baylor.
Yeah, get over it. Feel the hero. Chill. The amount of people that go after college students and high school kids is just so bizarre.
I agree with that.
And like people leave your school and they like it better. Oh no. Like, your feelings hurt? I'm so sorry.
The school that doesn't have restrictive religious rules.
Yeah. And the only thing it's known
not
for is
everybody.
Like a religious cult burning down. Like, what else is there to do in
Waco? That's Waco. Now, Baylor is known
athletics,
for
they
sexual
kinda,
assault scandals and
that's
murder.
That's true. You're right.
I was
going
to say, they wish they were known for the cult stuff.
Yeah. The cult stuff, honestly, wasn't that bad. I mean, that was more the ATF than it was
that's true.
The cult.
The TV show they did of that, Waco, was incredible.
Still haven't seen it. I watched the documentary. I was rather disappointed by the documentary.
Yeah, the documentary was not good. I thought the TV show, it was the guy who played Jared Koresh was one of the guys from Friday Night Lights.
Taylor Kitsch.
Yeah, yeah, he was very good. Mm-hmm. I very much enjoyed that one. All right, well, that's our Waco and Jared Koresh segment of the day for in case you missed it. Coming up next, is tonight must win for the Rockets against the Timberwolves? We'll discuss that next year on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
First, let me tell you about my friends at MyBookie. At MyBookie.ag, you go to the website, you enter promo code BET975, and you're going to get a deposit bonus of up to $1,000 right away. Astros won last night. They're going to get it done again. They're 1.5 run favorites against the Toronto Blue Jays with tonight's first pitch at Minute Maid Park at 7:10. Framber Valdez on the mound against Jose Berrios. What do you think is going to happen on that front? Maybe you want to bet on basketball as well, because the Houston Rockets have a pretty big game tonight. They're 7.5-point dogs against the Minnesota Timberwolves, who have one of the best records in the Western Conference, but no Karl Anthony Towns. Have a little parlay here, right? Houston forever. Astros cover the 1.5. Rockets cover the 7.5. You're going to make some money. And you go to mybookie.ag, promo code BET975. You sign up. You get that promo code in there. Again, they match your first deposit up to $1,000. You can gamble on blackjack, on poker if you want to, play cards, live casino with live dealers. It's mybookie.ag, promo code BET975. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere, only with mybookie.ag.
ESPN 97.5. We're back with Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul and Joe.
The Rockets tonight look back to get back into the win column and take on the Minnesota Timberwolves. They're two games back right now of the play-in tournament, coming off the 11-game win streak. We talked about this a little bit yesterday. I have an unfounded confidence that they're going to not win tonight, but they're going to just bounce back and not collapse like the Rockets teams of the last 2 years, I believe, would have. And we'll see how it plays out. But would you define tonight's game as a must win? Because I know everyone has a different philosophy on this about what's must win.
Every game's must win.
I kind of agree with that sentiment.
It is funny, this idea that not every game is must win. No, every game is must win. That's why you play the games. You're playing to try and win. Now, there are certain circumstances, depending on the point in the schedule, where a game feels more like must win than another game.
Sure.
But that's why you play these games. And it's funny that, especially down the stretch, that you would look at any game for a Rockets team that's fighting to get into the play-in tournament as anything but must win. They got to win out, probably, to guarantee a spot in this play-in. Because I don't know that Golden State's going to help him out. Because this seems like the kind of the time of year where Golden State traditionally is like, okay, playoffs are around the corner. They probably don't look at things on a night-to-night basis as being must-win. But for a young team like the Rockets, you have no choice but to do that right now.
Yeah, tonight it's a must-win. I 100% have no issue saying that. I know technically they will not be eliminated from the play-in tournament if they do not win tonight. But if you lose and Golden State wins against the Dallas Mavericks, you're then three games back of the Warriors. And yes, you play them on Thursday night, but even if you win that game, you're still two games back. So just at this point in the season, you have to stay on pace as much as humanly possible. So at worst, you need to equal Golden State's result tonight, which you won't know until way after your game is over. So that's why
it's must win.
Yeah, it's must win.
Yeah, I mean, if to make the play-in, like, they basically have to win every game. Like, because, like you said, they are three games back from the Warriors, and now they do get to play the Warriors. Mm-hmm. But that game won't have any bearing on the tiebreaker between the two teams. The Warriors have already won the tiebreaker. So they need to finish this season after game 82, one game ahead of the Warriors. So you can basically just tack on an extra game that they are behind the Warriors, because if they finish tied, the Warriors make the play-in anyway. So, yeah, I mean, they have to win, what, three more games than the Warriors? No, four more games than the Warriors do for the rest of the season.
Yeah, it's not gonna be easy.
It's gonna be almost impossible.
Yeah, it's the push of the play-in tournament has been awesome. I'm glad that they got to this point. This is, to me, what phase two was really about, what I heard from Tillman when he introduced Ime Udoka. To me, most people took what he said too literally about learning, about winning again, and it was, okay, the expectations are to make the playoff. This is the beginning of phase two, is learning how to win again. Finishing, you know, with what, the third pick in the draft last year through the lottery system, and then winning over 40 games this year is an incredible jump. And your expectations for next year, if you win 40-plus this year, would be to win almost 50 games in 2024-25. So the trajectory the Rockets on is great, and I'm not upset at all if they miss the playoffs.
Almost 50 next year?
I think that's fair.
Oh, they're going to finish with like 40, 41 wins this year.
Yeah. I mean, look at the
so that is just kind of keeping the incline up. You imagine Sengun's probably going to be healthier. You're going to get at least, maybe if not this Jalen Green, you're going to get more than you got for most of the season from Jalen Green.
Get year two of Amen Thompson.
Yeah. So I don't know, maybe like high 40s, but yeah, I would say that's like reasonable. How about 40, 45 and a half would be the like over-under.
I mean, look at the Oklahoma City Thunder. In 2022-23, they made the play-in tournament at 40 and 42. So they were the last team to make the playoffs. This year, they have 52 wins. If you're looking at the trajectory of a rebuilding organization, I don't think it's unfair to compare yourself to the Oklahoma City Thunder and say that you should be maybe not be the one seed in the Western Conference like the Thunder are right now, but you should be chasing 50 wins next season. That seems totally fair to me.
I just wonder how realistic that is with where they're currently at.
Sure.
How much better are they going to be this year,
next year
versus this current year? And I ask that because obviously what they're doing right now has been with a lot of missing parts. Tari Eason's been out. Cam Whitmore finally came back just the other night, Sunday night against Dallas. No Sengun.
Mm-hmm.
There's been players missing, and if they all come back together, this is not me saying that it's not all necessarily going to work out. But I do think that there's enough unknown to say that the Rockets, I think as currently constructed, are probably fighting for the same spot that they're at right now. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just I feel like somebody has to take a dramatic leap from where they're at now to then. And maybe Jalen Green's doing that at just over this last month. But there's still a bit of skepticism on my end when it comes to Green being able to continue this. It's not that he's not capable. Just consistency is just the biggest question for any player.
I'm not even saying continue this. Just don't play like an active detriment to your team for 60 games. That's the bar for the first 60 games of the season was actually bad.
Fair point, Sean. Do you think this is never going to happen again, though? The stretch where Green plays like this. Is this just gone for good? I hope it's gone for good. But can we definitively say that there's never going to be a stretch like this again from Green?
No.
He's going to have bad games in his career, but I don't think he's going to be consistently benched in the fourth quarter.
If you look at the comp that everyone uses for him, it still is very possible that it's accurate that if he is just Zach LaVine, there's going to be a lot of times where you have very bad basketball on a consistent basis from Jalen Green, and then you're going to have these stretches where it's absolutely incredible. The challenge for Jalen Green and the Rockets, to your point, Paul, is that they need to find the middle ground. They need to find the balance of this team with Sengun and all these guys back.
There's another thing, and I was looking for the tweet. I can't find the exact tweet, but someone went in through the past however many years of the 10 seeds of the West, especially like the play-in era. And normally the 10 seed in the West is like 35 wins. So this is an 11 seed, but in most years this team would be like an 8-9 in that kind of consideration, where even under the old rules would be either in the playoffs or fighting for playoff positioning. So there is the case to be made that even if they just run it back and are exactly as good next year, that they win 43 games, and that's enough to be the 7 seed. So like that, there's also, because you look at some of the teams in the West, the Warriors, a lot of older players, definitely on their way down.
I mean, Clay probably won't even be there next year.
I was about to say nice and maybe on their way down. They're definitely on the way down. Then you go to the 9 seed, the Lakers. The best player's 38 years old, probably on their way down. You have, I think, the Suns the 7th seed?
Yeah.
Suns the 7th seed, Kevin Durant kind of falling apart, and all their guys were already hurt all this year and will only be a year older. So there are spots to make up. The Clippers are like the 4 or the 5 seed. So there will be some teams moving out of the playoffs, or at least being more gettable in the playoffs, as you hope this young core is growing together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I tend to agree with that. The West is, I mean, you look back to the first year that the Spurs made the playoffs at 33, or the plan at 33 wins. The next year they all made it at 34 wins. You've got teams last year at 36 wins.
Yeah.
So
that's about where it is like most years. It's like a mid-30s team.
Yeah.
And the Rockets already have over that.
Yeah, so you get back to 500 next year or above, you'll be okay.
I can see that. 50 wins, it's that number was what jumped out.
Yeah, I mean,
to me.
I think they should be chasing it next year.
There's no doubt they should be chasing it. I mean, yeah. They should be chasing it.
It's like how making the play-in was the like stretch goal basically for this year's team, and they're getting pretty close to it. I don't think they'll actually get there, but they got way closer than it looked like they were basically at any point in the season after January.
If they don't get there, is to play in the goal next year too? Because I feel like that is still more realistic than 50.
I think being the 6th seed, not having to play in the play-in game.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're shooting a little bit higher. That's totally fair.
Avoiding the play-in, like, because if you want to be like a real like contender, real basketball team. Now, I know that the Miami Heat made the finals out of the play-in, and the Lakers got swept in the Western Conference Finals after making the play-in. Those are very extreme examples of what seven and eight seeds do in the playoffs.
There's no Jimmy Butler.
If you're a serious playoff team, you are kind of a 6 seed or above.
I would say, yeah, goals for next year should be at minimum be the 7 seed, so you only have to win one game in the play-in tournament to secure your spot in the playoffs. That would be your goals next year.
And right now, Dallas and New Orleans both have 45 wins, and those are the 5 and 6 seed. Yeah. So, you know, again, high 40s, maybe 50.
Mm-hmm. All right, the Texans spent the most money, guaranteed money, this offseason. They got $26 million remaining. Do they need to make another move, or will they make another move? We'll discuss that next year on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.